Good evening. My name is Bob Corwin. I'm an alcoholic. Boy, you've come a long way, baby. Oh, my God. What a place. Listen, some of you folks know my wife, Sybil, and I want to, because Sybil asked me to, I want to say for her that she's so sorry that she could not be here tonight. She wanted to be here. She tried very hard to be here. And at the last minute, she simply couldn't make it. She loves you all, but she's just not too well. I'm going to say something that also, and then I'll get off of this personal thing. But she'd like to hear from you. If you want to call her, call her. If she can talk on the phone, she will. If not, call me or see me, and I'll give you our address. Okay. I tell you what, I've really got some good news. I am wearing a brand new pair of Fruit of the Loom jockey shorts. Some of you people knew me when I didn't have any shorts. I have come to believe that clean socks and clean shorts are a truly spiritual experience. I don't like to blow too much smoke, but once in a while I even tell the truth. And I'll talk about this group here for a minute. I am, of course, at least you won't identify with this, but I'm a very critical person. I mean, I'm really a critical person. It's part of my nature, and it's part of my defects of character that I keep, you know, asking that it be removed, and not much progress is made. But when I can find fault, I usually do. And I've been looking at this group over very carefully tonight, and I've been speaking at this group on and off for many years. And it has finally reached the point in this group to where I can't find anything wrong with it. I'm not talking about the people. But as a group, I mean this honestly, as a group, the way it's run, I can't find anything wrong. It really run well. In fact, you've even got a new secretary now. And he called me, and I'm glad you've finally given him something to do. And he asked me to speak here, and he said at last he felt that he was getting a little recognition around the group. I'm not going to mention his name because he's too humble for that. And now, some of you people, that's inside stuff. And so forget the inside stuff. We're talking about Alcoholics Anonymous now. We're talking about why I'm here and why you're here. Well, I really don't know why you're here. I suspect it's because you're an alcoholic. Now, I saw the new hands. Down there, I saw one of the new men there. He's a new man. And he's in the hearing impaired group. Hi. I saw about 10, 12 new people. That means new this week. And I'm really glad to see you there, up there. I mean, it's wonderful to know that there are new people. I know how bewildering it is to be new. We all remember what it was like to be new. Very confusing. What's going on? Why am I here? I mean, I really wondered why I was there, because I had only come to my first AA meeting to do a man a favor. You understand that? You know, he'd been so nice, least I could do was go along to the AA meeting with him. AA meetings were different in those days. They weren't any better. They were just different. They didn't have formats. They didn't have the structure that you have now. In this size room, you've got to have some organization or it would be bedlam. I mean, all these power drivers, everybody going their own way. Absolute chaos. It's remarkable that you get done what you. The job I don't want. I don't want this job. That's a thankless job. I watch this poor guy pounding, and nobody pays any attention. But I want to congratulate you. At least you do that to get the people to be seated. You don't use the traditions as a mechanism to get people to be seated, which they do in other groups. So, by and large, I'm not going to name the group because this tape may get out in somewhere in the world and they will never know where it's coming from. This is the Pacific group. When I came to my first meeting, they did not announce that it was an AA meeting. They didn't have a format. They didn't have this. They simply said this is... They didn't say that. They didn't say this is the regular AA meeting as you hear now. The first words I heard were, tonight it's Joe's birthday. And I could only think of, so what? Who cares? So what? The man who took me there had told me that they were going to help me with my drinking problem. And if I had one. And then I hear it's Joe's birthday. No, there was no word about Alcoholics Anonymous. And when Joe walked up, they didn't have cakes like they had in these days, nowadays. And they didn't seem to keep coming back, but they did sing Happy Birthday. And it was horrible. Everybody out of tune. Everybody had their own idea of what meter to use. Well, I'm a trained singer. I know good singing when I hear it. I sang in the choir at San Quentin. But these guys, it was horrible. But they had a cupcake. They had a cupcake. And they had one candle in it. And this bunch of old, god-awful old men, about as old as I am now, old guys. I was 27 years old. And these guys, they started to sing Happy Birthday. And I thought I'd go out of my mind. It was, and when they got through singing, and he blew out that candle, this bunch of old men just went ape. Just, whoopee, oh God, this is what they do on a Saturday night for a good time. And I was really awful. And then he got up and he talked about, nobody mentioned Alcoholics Anonymous yet. And he, but it was his birthday, so he got to talk. That's not different. And he talked about something to the effect of beating up his poor old grandmother and getting drunk and taking $10 out of her purse to get drunk again. And they all gave him a hand for that. And I'm trying to figure out what kind of a funny farm I'm in. I didn't know if I belonged in AA, and I didn't know if I was an alcoholic. And you may not know if you're an alcoholic. You may not even know why you're here. I got to tell you a little joke. It's not a new joke, but I've got to tell it before I forget it because I love the little story. It's about, did you hear about the actor who came from the Midwest, came out to Los Angeles to follow his career, but his career was going like nowhere. So he joined Alcoholics Anonymous. Because he didn't drink, but he needed the stage time. I know the feeling. When I got here, there was about... Well, the traditions hadn't been published yet. They were talking about them, and they were printed. But the traditions actually came out officially in 1950. And before that, it was gangbusters. Anybody, like my wife will tell you, if you started a group, you owned the group till death do you part. And now we have a rotating, even Clancy got to be a secretary now, see? That's progress. I would like to tell you that I stayed sober from those days from 1949. I really wouldn't like to tell you that, because if I told you that, then I wouldn't have anything else to tell you. But I didn't stay sober from that day on, but I kept coming back. I kept coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And why did I keep coming back? Well, I knew that you had something that I wanted, but I didn't know what it was. It couldn't have been sobriety. I wasn't interested in sobriety. I had tried sobriety. Sobriety was terrible. I knew about sobriety. Sobriety was frightening. Now, I've been sober now for many years, and I like it that way. I really like being sober. But I'm in my 25th year of sobriety now. That's after 25 years, I can stand up here and tell you I like it that way. But at first, the idea of not drinking was terrifying, absolutely terrifying. The idea now of drinking is terrifying, and do a complete change. Why? Let me go back. I mentioned prison. I told you, I think I mentioned that I sang in the choir at San Quentin. I stayed sober in San Quentin for 5 years. But I didn't like it that way. I don't like that kind of... So sobriety was no great novel to me. Not novelty at all. I was a periodic alcoholic. Now, there is a periodic has a little unique problem because sobriety is not unique. Periodics stay sober for long periods of time. I used to stay sober for long periods of time. Towards the end, I did not. But in the early days, first 10, 15 years of my drinking, I was periodic. And I'd stay sober maybe 6 months, sometimes 3 weeks, sometimes a week. Then I'd break out into a drunk and then wonder what happened and say, I'm not going to do it again. But just to be sober for a few days was no great revelation. Now, I know some people, like when that first meeting I went to, these guys drank, and they said so, they drank like two-fifths a day for 20 years. I didn't drink two-fifths a day for 20 years. I did the best I could, but I didn't drink like that. And the periodic comes, I mean, I see so many periodics that come to AA, and they're not impressed with their sobriety because they've been sober a lot, and I confused the AA program with abstinence. I thought you come to AA and you abstain from drinking, period. Well, you do come to AA and you do abstain from drinking, but don't put a period there. Put any kind of punctuation you like, except a question mark, because there's more to it. I remember, some of you remember this old AA guy who used to say, abstinence will drive you to drink. Abstinence will really drive you to drink. If that's all there is, then you kind of get on that, what is it, their hamburger song that says, in and out, in and out. That's what abstinence is all about. If that's all you got going for you, which is all I had going for me in AA, was abstinence. And I would stay sober, and I would join everything you had going. I'd get on the dance committee. I'd do all those things. I mean, I'd get on all those little activities that they had. And then as soon as something came along where drinking was the reflex, I would drink. All I had was abstinence, and I had to learn how to stay sober. I had to learn that... Now, tonight, I have to keep back and forth and talking back and forth because I can't talk in a great continuity and A, B, C, this thing, because that's just not the way my head works. I just have to... What goes into my head? I love my life. Now, I have a life that's probably no different than yours. It's full of trouble. It's really full of trouble. I have all kinds of troubles in my life. But so what's new? So does everybody else. That's not anything new. I have financial troubles. I have health troubles. I have family troubles. I have every kind of trouble that you can think of. And I love life. I just love living every moment of it. Now, this is a great thing for me. This is a great, because I never felt this way about life. I felt that life was something that was some great big goal to achieve. If I was an artist, and I often thought of this, and I do hope you'll excuse me if I take my coat off. I'm not complaining, I'm just telling you. I haven't been well, I've got to take my coat off. It'll be all right, I hope. If I were an artist, I really wish I had the talent to paint a picture. I would like to paint a picture of me. And I think it wouldn't be, you wouldn't see much of me in it, but it would be a picture of, I think I'd call it the seeker, trying to find happiness. And I think it would be me or somebody close up here. And into the background, stretching off into the infinity there, into the horizon, would be this trail along which I have come. This is my life. And on either side of the trail are all the things that I thought would bring me happiness that I have discarded. It would be back, of course, way back at the horizon would be my childhood, would be teddy bears and toys and things like that, I suppose. And then more, mostly, not always material things, but washing machines and cars and people, discarded money, all these things, glittering baubles, you know, all kind of sinking into this barren quagmire of despair, whatever, or disappointment would be better, unfulfilled. And but there I would be in the foreground, maybe with some kind of a light upon me, reaching eagerly with these glazed eyes at the next thing that was going to turn the trick. And there is no such thing, I found out. There's no such thing. Now, I'm telling you, I'm happy. When I came to AA and I heard people talk about being happy, I really thought they meant happy, happy, hippie, hippie, hoo, hoo, ha, ha, laugh, laugh, isn't life wonderful, like Alice in Wonderland or something. Well, life is wonderful, but the old fairy tale of, and then they lived happily ever after, it doesn't apply in the sense that I used to understand it. If living happily ever after means you never have any trouble, if it means you never have any trouble, then I have never lived happy. But I now live very happy. Believe me, you know what I would like to put in that picture, if you could just make it three-dimensional so you could see ahead of the frame. I think I have a picture of me and my wife, Sybil, sitting on our patio, watching the hummingbirds come to hummingbird feeder. And now we are contented and we are at peace, despite all the things that happen in our life. We have finally found what it is that you have. You have peace of mind. And that's what I was looking for all my life. In every glass, in every Benzedrine tablet, in every little fix that I ever had, I didn't know it, but I was looking for peace of mind. And that's what I have found. That regardless of what comes, I don't make life worse by getting drunk at it. And that life is living. That's what life is. Life is living. When somebody doesn't like me, well, that's part of life. If somebody loves me, that's part of life. It took me a long time to reach this point of contentment. If life never got any better than it is for me at this moment, or has been for me for the last few years, that would be okay with me. That doesn't mean I've given up trying to make it better. Of course not. But I'm so overwhelmed tonight with this sense of gratitude that I have for being alive. I saw Ben. I see Ben, he's around here somewhere. I don't see him right now. Ben is 88 years old. Ben came to AA when he was 74 or so. And Ben and I, we were talking about this thing about you don't give up. You just don't give up. You just keep going, no matter what. And even that is fun. I don't care how bad things are. It's fun to know that, by God, you're in the business of living. And I was always thought the business of living had something to do with high hilarity and gold Cadillacs in Las Vegas and things like that, and has nothing to do with it at all. And learn it isn't Alcoholics Anonymous. How did I get to be so wise? Huh? How did I get to know all these wonderful things about living? And they are wonderful things for me, and they may not apply to you at all. I learned them right here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got here as an atheist. You have to know I got here as an atheist. The worst thing I ever heard. I was so disappointed at that first meeting. They said, there is one who has all power, that one is God, may you find him now. I thought, oh, no, not that. Please, God Almighty. I remember being in the county jail. Some of you have been there, I know you have. And some of you have been in the county jail. I don't know if they still do this, because I haven't been in the county jail in 40 years, but they used to say, church on the line. I'm not making fun of church. Please understand me. I'm telling you how it used to be like. They say, church on the line, and these good, well-meaning people would come up there, some even with tambourines. And They'd open the cell doors, but you'd still be inside the block, and you'd go down to the end of the block down there, and they'd sing, and they'd bang on their tambourines. And I think, oh, my God. And I couldn't stand it. I'd go clear on the other end of the tank and bum cigarettes from some guy or something. And then I get into A, and then we had it in San Quentin, too, a church on the line. I did sing in the choir in San Quentin, but that was different. I was trying to make parole. And so when I got to AA and I heard this God thing, I said, oh, no. Oh, no. I am an atheist. Was. I'm not an atheist now. Hope you get the past tense. Used to be. But that all. Good Lord. They've been trying to pull that thing for generations and it never did any help to all these drunks that I know of. Yeah, I mean, my father is still alive. And my father, sweet, kind, more gentle man you will never meet, he is an atheist today. I was raised an atheist. People used to say, what's your religion? I said, baptized atheist. So I get here, I hear this God thing, and it just about ricocheted me. My sponsor, some of you remember him, Bill Gartland, God love him, old Bill Gartland. He said, hit him that way. That's why he became my sponsor, because we had this great identity. He said, it just pow. It just hit him in the head. God, oh, not that. He had, his sister was a nun. They had half the Carmelites and wherever they were praying for his sobriety, and he never got sober. His father died a drunk, and they're giving that God stuff. And I felt the same way. It was just terrifying. Understand? I said, I am no longer an atheist, but that's, so I'm saying to you, if you're an atheist, relax. Relax. I'm in my 25th year of not drinking. Nothing. No Benzedrine. No booze. No marijuana cigarettes. No mind-altering chemicals. Except when I had open-heart surgery. And I come out of open-heart surgery here a couple of years ago, and this gal is pumping me in the hip with something. And I said, what is that? She says, morphine. I said, no. I don't need morphine. But any of you people who are doctors and nurses, please pay attention to alcoholics. Of course, you're here, so you know better. But I wasn't trying to be noble. I wasn't hurting that bad. If I had been hurting that bad, I think I might have said, yeah, come on, you know. But I wasn't hurting that bad. It wasn't unbearable. It wasn't excruciating. I didn't want morphine. I didn't want to go back. I've been there. I don't want to go back. The one thing in the world I don't want to do is to go back. And that's what this whole program is about. The finest thing about this program, to me, the key word, the key, everybody has their own little specialties, is step two, where it says, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Everything I do in AA, everything I listen to, every thought I have about my sobriety is to keep that insanity at bay. Because when that insanity returns, as it had to me many times, because I was never far away from AA. I had 5 1-year birthday cakes. 5 of them. I had 2 2-year birthday cakes. And I had 1 3-year birthday cakes. Now don't tell me I wasn't involved in AA. I took inventories. I sponsored. I was a guest speaker. And every once in a while I get drunk. People would say, what happened, Bob? And I'd say, it just seemed like a good idea. And that is stark raving mad. And I don't want that insanity to ever return. Every once in a while I hear some person in AA say, they'll say, talk about the silly things they did while drunk. And then they'll say, thank God for the second step. That second step isn't talking about the crazy things you did while drunk, as far as I understand it. As I understand that second step, it's talking about this idea that after all that I've been through, and after I have been exposed to the backdrop of all that you've been through, and then to have this idea come through my head that it's a good idea to take a drink. That is stark, raving mad. I don't want to go back to prison anymore. I don't want to fight people. I don't want people to fight me. I want to be at peace. I want to live a nice, comfortable, easy, average Joe Blow life. And so I think that step two spells out my problem. I don't want to go crazy anymore and just think it's a good idea to get drunk. Well, I was told to say this, so I'll tell you again. Some guy said, oh, you be sure and tell him why you went to prison, Bob. Okay, well, I'll tell you why I went to prison. Because you're probably wondering anyway, those of you who don't know why I went to prison. I have to tell you, I would love to tell you what I used to tell people, but how I was a safe cracker or bank robber, something impressive. I held up the hotel that I lived in. It wasn't exactly the crime of the century. I lived in the Lafayette Hotel up here on Beverly Boulevard. It wasn't a slum then, but I helped make it one. It is now. And I had got discharged from the Marine Corps in August of 1946. And here we are in August again. And I checked into the Lafayette Hotel, and I stayed there till Memorial Day. No, I'm 45. I got out of the Marine Corps in 45. Stayed there till Memorial Day of 46. Ran out of money on Memorial Day. There was off the lobby of the hotel was the Zimba Room. Boy, I mean a piano bar. I'm a sucker for a piano bar. Oh, God, I love piano bars. Get me half drunk and sing, Buddy, Can You Spare a Dime? And, oh, man, I was in heaven. And, well, this night I ran out of money about 10 o'clock. I mean, 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock at night I ran out of money. So I got this idea to hold up the desk clerk to whom I've been paying rent for all these months. So I came out of the Zimba Room and in here to the lobby, and here he is at the desk, and I put my hand in my coat. I didn't have a gun. Put my hand in my coat. I said, give me all your money. And he says, oh, Bob. He said, you can't do that. And I figured I could. He reached to open the drawer. He reached in, gave me his money. I don't know if I thanked him or not. I went back into the Zimba Room. I ordered drinks for the house. And in 7 minutes, I'm on my way to San Quentin. And that's how I went. And I hope you're impressed. See, that's just a cute, funny little story. And it is a cute, funny little story, and it really did happen. But it's not important. It is not important. It had nothing to do with me being an alcoholic. At all. I mean, you don't have to go. So don't start, if you're new, for God's sakes, don't start making comparisons. Remember in Comedy of Errors, racist comparisons are odious? Don't start making comparisons. That was Twelfth Night, by the way, but who cares? Don't make comparisons. If you didn't go to prison, that's nice. But that doesn't mean you're not an alcoholic. It hasn't got anything to do with it. There is a debate that goes on for which I will not even get involved in. I couldn't care less about whether alcoholism is heredity or acquired. To me, if it's hereditary or acquired, makes no difference. It makes no difference whatsoever. I got it. I don't care how I got it. Even knowing how I got it isn't going to be of any help to me. Academically, it just might be a wonderful thing to discuss. But science may someday solve it, but it hasn't done so yet. I don't care. I've got it. And that's all I got to know. What do I do about it? How did I know I got it? That's another thing. How did I know I got alcoholism? How do you know? If you're like me, most people, when my wife first came to AA, and when I first came to AA too, for that matter, most people were very old. They really were. They were what Bill Wilson, in AA of Age, described as the last gaspers. They had no place else to go until AA was invented, and then they've come rushing in. Well, now, people come very young, and sometimes they really aren't sure whether they're alcoholic or not. And if you're wondering whether you're an alcoholic, fine. I wondered whether I was an alcoholic. I sat in an AA meeting. I know you're alcoholic. What are you doing here? Of course you're alcoholic. Naturally, you're not here because you need the stage time. course. I mean, you're here because there's booze in your life. Of course you are. That's what this is all about. You're not here tonight because the TV guide had nothing but reruns in it. You're an alcoholic. But sometimes you don't know that. Even if I pronounce you an alcoholic, which I now do. Dominus Gobert. It doesn't make any difference. It won't help you for me to pronounce it. But I'll tell you what will help. Sitting around and listening to people tell you about their drunken stories. The thing that you don't want to hear. The thing you'll hear people say, well, I know how to drink and I want to hear about that. Well, that's the very thing that will convince you and convinced me that I was alcoholic, by hearing what they did. I got here and I might have been willing to acquiesce that I was about that much alcoholic. Just a little tiny pinhole you could see through. Just a little bit alcoholic. And then I heard a guy say this, whatever it was. And I said, oh, I did that. And then another girl said she did this. And I said, oh, I did that. And these people are all saying they're alcoholic. And I find I'm doing all the things that they say they do because they're alcoholic. And so what I used to be like got bigger and bigger and more. It's like a great big jigsaw puzzle or a montage or something like that. And finally, it takes up this whole wall. That's what I used to be like. I am one great big alcoholic. And I learned it from listening to you tell me about you being an alcoholic. Example. Same hotel before I held it up. I never went back after I held it up. I ran out of money. The only problem I ever recognized with drinking was running out of money. So I went upstairs. I left the hotel. I mean, I know exactly what I was going to do. I left the bar, went upstairs, waited an appropriate period of time, came back down into the Zimba room. Now my buddies are there, you know. And I look at my buddies, and I got this face. We're good actors. God, we're good. And I had this real sad face. And they said, oh, Bob, what happened? I said, my mother just died. I identify with a guy that's had three cancers already. Oh, God, do I identify with that? My mother just died. Of course, she was living about four blocks from where I'm telling this story, and she was strong as an ox. And oh, my God. Well, that's too bad, Bob. Well, where's your mother? And I had to think of a long place from Los Angeles and still be... I said, Norfolk, Virginia. Just get it a long way off. And I said, what a rogue I am. Oh, what a terrible son I am. My God, here I am, and I haven't... Naturally, I don't have money for a trip back there to the funeral. I don't even have money to send flowers to my own mother's funeral. And I sat there, and the guy said, here, Bob, bartender, slides over a drink. Thank you. I took the drink. Then I noticed this little envelope being passed around. And then finally the bartender got it, and he turned his back. He hit the cash register, no sale. Tong, cash register comes out. He puts a few things in the envelope and closes it. Here, Bob. It just said on there, Bob, on the envelope. I was just appropriately moved. And I didn't flee from the bar. And I didn't drag myself out. I just walked like a man who was going to buy flowers for his mother's funeral. And, boy, but when I got outside, I ripped that baby. Oh, look at all that green stuff. Wow, man, I'm gone, you know. And, well, that bothered me when I... Well, I tell you what, you know what really bothered me? I got caught. Nothing will jar your conscience so much as getting caught. Now, that green light says I got 5 minutes. I don't know how long it's been on. I think it's been on 5 minutes. I certainly know I'm going to sit down when the red light comes on. I was at the Home and Ground one night, and a gal was talking, and she, in Oklahoma, had done the same thing. She ran to the Irish bar. She didn't have anything under to drink. That was her drinking joint. And they said, what's the matter, Madeline? She said, my mother just died. They said, glory be golly, let's have a wake. And so they drank all day. And of course, her mother's home. And so the next day, they come over to her house to carry on the wake, and she had to hide her mother in the closet. Wow! What a wonderful feeling. Identification.
I belong. I am one of you, and I do what you have done. And no matter what I have done, I don't feel too bad about it anymore. In this respect, that no matter what it is, some of you have done it. And I'm not a freak. See, that's the point. I'm not a freak. It isn't that every one of you have done what I have done, but enough of you have to make me feel comfortable with my life. I am no longer an atheist. A woman one night said this. She said, in all probability, the closest she'll ever come to finding God is in the seeking. And I was home free. I know it says, may you find God. May you find God. Lots of luck. But you don't have to. You do not, but you have to seek. It says so right here in the 5th chapter that we read at every AA meeting at the conclusion thereof. That no matter what, God could and would if he were sought. Sought, not found. Gee, don't we get things crazy. For years I heard it, God couldn't, would, and you're found. It does not say that. All it says is God could and would if he were found. So that picture of me, the seeker, looking for all these things, huh? Good and good if you were, you know, sought, right? You flash the damn amber light on it, that'll blow your brains right out. But that picture of me, the seeker, now at least I know what I'm seeking. I'm seeking this thing that you, some of you have already found. And it's okay to want. The thing is to know what to want. Now I know what I want, and I want to keep it because I have found peace of mind, and I keep seeking God. Thank you very much.